Welcome. Last week, we started a four-week series on discipleship. We challenge listeners to set aside 1 month and read the book of Matthew, committing to one chapter a day for 28 days. In today's episode, we are going to look at the words and the ways of Jesus and how his actions lined up in all places and all times. Let's dive in. If you'll remember with me, we said last week that the purpose of this mini-series is not to make us feel guilty about what we aren't doing, but aware of our greatest calling. Well, if there's one thing America is obsessed with currently, it is fraudsters, con men, and hypocrites. Take a look at what I mean. On Netflix, one of the top watch series in spring of 2022 was Inventing Anna, the story of Anna Sorokin, who created the fake identity of Anna Delvey and conned many elite names in New York City and is now a top watch Netflix series. On Hulu, a show that's gotten a lot of buzz this spring has been The Dropout, about Elizabeth Holmes, who advertised a false product while taking more than $900 million from investors and is now convicted of criminal fraud. Or we could talk about The Tinder Swindler, a story of a man who seduced and scammed multiple women, convincing them that he was the son of a diamond tycoon through the dating app Tinder. And this is just to name a few of the many we've seen crop up recently. It seems that America cannot get enough of scams and scammers. But why? I started doing some research and thinking a little bit more about this, and these are some of the reasons that I found. We are obsessed with beauty, money, power, and fame. We think of the victims, and we maybe say to ourselves, that would never happen to me. I am smarter, far less gullible, and just a better judge of character. We are fascinated with how something like this could happen, that someone could actually pull something of this magnitude off. Or maybe it's easier to point out the mistakes of others, the unbelievable and inexcusable actions of the offenders before admitting to our own. I think if we look even a little bit deeper, we can see that we are self-righteous and feel better about ourselves when others' sins and embarrassing behavior is fully exposed. It is not, however, nearly as fascinating to us when someone simply is who they say they are. Think about that. It may even make us feel bad about ourselves. Think with me for a minute about what one of the number one criticisms of Christians is. What I often hear is people saying and complaining that Christians are hypocrites. And while there is truth to that, rarely do we hear people talk about the fact that Jesus Christ was the only non-hypocritical one, the only true person whose words and actions lined up at all places, in all times, in all crowds. I recently heard a podcast with an author named Dane Ortlund. When asked how to differentiate between someone who has disappointed us in Jesus' name and Jesus himself, he responded, "We must remember that every single Christian we come across is more deeply a fraud than we know. There is one utterly consistent person in the universe, Jesus Christ, one who will act in total non-hypocrisy his whole life long." Let's look at hypocrisy today, what Jesus says about it, and how he was the first and only person to ever act in total non-hypocrisy his whole life long. First of all, hypocrisy is defined as play acting. It comes from the root verb to pretend. When Jesus criticizes and calls the Pharisees hypocrites, he's pointing out that they were performing for the world on the outside, while inside their hearts were far from God. They thought they were doing the right things, but they were missing the big picture and missing Christ entirely. Throughout the book of Matthew, he uses a phrase, "this was to fulfill." And when we hear the author say these words, he's making a connection between what Jesus is doing in the Gospels and what was said about him long before he was born by the prophets of the Old Testament. Today, we want to look at how what Christ teaches and says about himself consistently line up with his actions. If you're following along with the 28 chapter challenge, where you read one chapter a day in Matthew all month long, this week you'd be reading Matthew 8 through 14. Today, we're going to look at chapters 5 through 7. These chapters retell the Sermon on the Mount, and an interesting side note is that Matthew, the author, was known for writing in shorthand. So not only was he led by the Spirit of God, but he was able to record word for word the teachings of Christ. Think of a typist in a courtroom. So let's look at that sermon now. Matthew 5, verses 11 through 12. Jesus says these words. He says, "Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." Then if we look in chapter 6, verses 1 through 4, still in that same Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, "Beware of practicing your righteousness before others in order to be seen by them. For then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly, I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you." In verses 5 and 6, talking about the Lord's Prayer, Jesus says, "And when you pray, you must not be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogue and at the street corners, that they may be seen by others. Truly, I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you pray, go into your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you." Down in verses 16 through 18, Jesus continues and he says, "When you fast, do not look gloomy like the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces that their fasting may be seen by others. Truly, I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, that your fasting may not be seen by others, but by your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you." What were some of the common words or phrases that you heard? I heard a lot of repetition of the word hypocrite and actions being done before men. And then the contrast of actions being done in secret and the Lord seeing those and rewarding those. Tuck those away in your brain and we'll get back to that in a minute. Further on in Matthew 6, verses 25 through 34, it's a longer passage and we're not going to read all of it, but Jesus teaches about not being anxious, reminding the people how much more valuable they are than the birds that God provides for. In Matthew 7, we hear Christ introduce the golden rule of do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's interesting that Christ's use of hypocrisy talks about deeds done before men for the praise of man. And we're going to look at how Christ lives out some of these teachings that we just read through in Matthew 5 through 7. So let's flip forward to Matthew chapters 13 and 14. We're going to summarize a little bit. And in verses 53 through 58, Jesus is rejected in his hometown of Nazareth. Jesus had taught, remember, back in Matthew 5, verses 11 through 12, "Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account." And then we see it happen here. In Matthew 14, verses 1 through 12, John the Baptist, Jesus's cousin, is beheaded. His head is served on a platter. The disciples come and take away his decapitated body and bury it. Imagine how traumatic, how gruesome, how devastating this would have been. The disciples were real people with emotions. And just a few verses later, in 13 through 21, when Jesus hears this news, he withdraws to pray in secret with his Father, not on the street corner, not before men, not even before the disciples, but in secret with his Father. And yet the crowds follow him, and he's moved by compassion, even as he's dealing with his own grief. It is then when Jesus feeds the 5,000 men plus women and children from just a couple loaves and fish. We see Jesus provide for the people, these people who are infinitely more valuable than birds, treating them by the golden rule he just laid out. In Matthew 14, verses 22 through 33, Jesus again seeks to get alone and pray. He goes to a nearby mountain and he's there alone meeting God. It's then that a storm comes and the disciples are worried. Jesus walks out to them on the water, saying in verse 27, echoing the words that he had just said in Matthew 6, "Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid." Peter comes out to meet him on the water, and Jesus calms the storm. He cares for the people. It is at the close of this series of events that the disciples say, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Isn't it powerful to see how Jesus' actions model his teachings? I recently watched a documentary called The Jesus Music on Hulu. I highly recommend it. It was a fascinating documentary on the history and the creation of Christian music. And Amy Grant is one of the producers. And in there, her publicist tells a story about her during her divorce that took place in the 90s. Her producer shares that he had worked really hard to protect her from people who were meaning her harm and seeking to attack her character. But one time, a naysayer slipped under the radar and began to just attack her with all kinds of words, just saying, "You're such a hypocrite, you're a terrible person." And before he could even go any further, she stopped him and she said, "Oh, I am so much worse than you know. And only by the grace of God do I get up every day." Folks, what if instead of feeding our own self-righteousness, our own tendency to elevate ourselves above people so much worse than ourselves, to make ourselves look better than we actually are, what if we more readily admitted to our own hypocrisy and sin? What if we blew the whistle on ourselves? What if instead of seeking to save face, we sought to be the first to confess our sin and our shortcomings? And what if we were the first to point out that Christ, the author and perfecter of our faith, the cornerstone of Christianity, is the only person who has ever lived in complete non-hypocrisy? Hear what I am saying. Never should we excuse bad behavior or think that being hypocritical is okay. Christ makes it very clear that sin is always bad news, and he calls us consistently to holiness. He speaks against areas of known sin and hypocrisy in what we just studied. But I think if we are honest with ourselves and others, we would admit that we pretend a lot. What if when someone accuses Christians of being hypocritical, we said, "Oh man, we are so much worse than the world even knows, but thank God that Christianity is not built on me or on our mess, but on the foundation of Jesus Christ first and foremost, the man who lived in total non-hypocrisy his whole life long." I want us to end by reading Matthew chapter 9, verses 9 through 13. And before we read these verses, I want to just give a little context that in this passage, we see that Jesus calls the author of this book to be his disciple. Remember last week, we said that Matthew was not a popular man because he was collecting taxes from his own people, giving them to the Roman government and making good money from his position. So read with me verses 9 through 13 of Matthew right now. He says, "As Jesus passed on from there, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax booth. And he said to him, 'Follow me.' And he rose and followed him. And as Jesus reclined at table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were reclining with Jesus and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, 'Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?' But when he heard it, he said, 'Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I came not to call the righteous, but sinners.'" Matthew wrote this passage about himself in third person. He identifies himself in the story. In doing this, he is admitting that he is just another one of the tax collectors and sinners who desperately needs Jesus. He does not defend himself, but rather he points to his own unworthiness while highlighting the sufficiency of Christ. Jesus quotes a passage in Hosea 7 here. He is saying that what he is after is not the outward action, but the inner heart change. And Jesus claims and calls anyone who recognizes his own sin and hypocrisy and calls on him Folks, let's be the first to admit to our own pretending, our own shortcomings, and point to the all-sufficiency and total non-hypocrisy of Christ. To find show notes for this and past episodes, or to engage on a deeper level, you can go to wovenministry.com/podcast. If you enjoy what you hear so far, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps listeners find and share this feed. If you'd like to tell us what you enjoyed about this podcast or ask your hard question, you can call us at 512-815-2446. That's 512-815-2446. You'll simply leave a voicemail with what's on your mind, and we might just include your voice on a future episode. Music and editing for the show is by Callan Brown. Recording and production by Tim Scarborough. I'm Whitney Scarborough, and we'll be back here with more very soon. Thanks for listening.